This is iSciFi TV, and you are listening to an original broadcast with director Wes Sullivan. The topic tonight is the movie Night Beast, an upcoming horror movie where Sasquatch, or the legend of Bigfoot, is brought to the screen in a very dark and horrific way. It's got some interesting topics. Runtime's about 26 minutes. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Wes Sullivan, the director of Night Beast, and I just want you all to be aware that you should be listening to iSciFi.
I kind of have a strange question, and I don't know if you've ever been asked this before, but IMDb shows most of your work as a in-betweener. What the heck is an in-betweener?
Yeah. Well, an in-betweener is basically a junior animator that works under a senior animator. The senior animator sort of sets the style and does the first several thousand feet of a character, and then we follow through and do the rest.
Because I even Googled for rough in-betweener, and your name came up second on Google. That's why I asked.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, is your work on Night Beast Beasts a little bit of a departure from your animation work on, like, Treasure Planet?
Quite a bit, I would say, in the sense that, you know, I'm the writer, the director, and the producer. I'm wearing a lot more hats. You know, the thing is, in animation, it's a very collaborative medium, so there are a number of us involved at the height of production, usually anywhere from 12 to 1,400 people. As artists, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 or 700, and then, you know, the other half is the additional support staff that do the digital follow-up, ink and paint, compositing, and such. So it's very much, you know, a group effort, and you're a cog in a big wheel. But that's sort of the division of labor that it takes to make a traditional Disney animated film happen. Whereas this feature of my own, you know, I had a crew, but I was pretty much the catalyst point for which everything else, you know, at the top of the pyramid came down from.
Yeah, no pun intended. Brett was saying if he could hold you down for 5 minutes.
Oh, I'm always on the go. Well, but I make it a point to do things like this because I want to, you know, touch the community that the audience, which is the audience for the film, you know.
Well, and it's just a little bit after 6 in L.A., and you sound like you're full of energy, so I guess you love what you do, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm passionate about it, absolutely.
And I have a really bad habit when I talk with people in the industry. When something hasn't been released, I try not to have spoilers, and then my really only source of information has been the press kit that you've had published on YouTube.
Right.
And
well, we just recently, a day or so ago, put a website up that can be reached through the YouTube account as well as the Twitter page that we have.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
When is Night Beast slated for release?
Well, we don't have an actual distribution date yet because right now what we're trying to do is generate word of mouth through the festival circuit and, you know, give it press attention and also sort of seed it in the science fiction and horror community so there's a grassroots base to know about the film prior to release, because unlike a studio film where the whole distribution, publicity, marketing machine goes into place well before the set release date, we have to sort of grow our marketplace prior to the movie coming out. So we're really not in a hurry to release it, actually.
Well, that can be good or bad, I guess, too. It's sometimes it's all about timing. The story with this movie has a little bit of a family emotional involvement, a recovering alcoholic, but really it's about Sasquatch, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's a genre film in every sense of the word, and there is humor in it, too. You know, we approached it with a seriousness in terms of being truthful and faithful to the story and the characters, but I think with any kind of a suspense horror type of film, you have to relieve tension at certain points, otherwise you just work your audience up to the point where they have nowhere else to go. So there's a lot of humor peppered throughout, but the humor is derived from situational events and the nature of who the characters are versus sort of just humor for humor's sake. So it's a kind of a delicate balance, I think, that we walk in the film.
So are you going to draw us in emotionally and dramatically and then surprise us with, I guess, the plucky humor to
absolutely
kind of relieve that and then turn around and scare the hell out of us? I mean, is it going to be
exactly
that?
Well, the other thing, too, is even though there haven't been that many Sasquatch films done in the past, there have been probably hundreds of thousands of horror films. And with the horror film, as the genre that it is, there's certain expectations, but there's also certain cliches of the horror film.
Right.
Certain things that people have come to expect, even in terms of certain types of shots. So we liberally play with the audience expectations quite a bit.
Well, this is not going to be any Harry and the Hendersons by any means, but I don't think it's going to be like Jason.
No. I tell people, you know, I think it's somewhat family-friendly. However, if I had a really young kid, I don't think I would take them to the film. However, it's not a torture porn movie in a sense that it's sadistically showing people suffering at great length and the walls are dripping with blood. It's not that sort of a thing.
That's a good thing, actually. Although I am a fan of every movie genre out there, I think sometimes the directors go a little bit too far. It's
well,
like,
I
okay,
think
20 gallons of blood and gratuitous sex scenes really doesn't make a horror movie. It makes more like a gore movie.
Yeah, I think what happens is, you know, there's narrative deficiencies in some of the writing that happens nowadays. And the idea is, well, we kind of are aware of that as filmmakers. Let's make up for it with the shock and awe effect, you know, which is usually the gore or the violent quotient. And I think if you have a decently written script and it's engaging and people are cued into your characters, I think that's the main thing. We spend a lot of time in this film setting up the characters, setting up the situational reality of who they are, how they think, what's going on in their lives, so that you're plugged into that, and then when the horrorization stuff happens, then you're on for the ride. I think if you don't really establish your characters very well up front and make them likable people, it's much harder to identify as an audience member with the horror when it ensues because you're sort of emotionally distant from the people to begin with.
Right. I think, anytime you have a story with family involvement, when the family's being torn apart from something scary or something emotional, that in itself is more terrifying than the gallons of blood that a typical...
Oh, yeah, because I think it's a universal. I mean, I think family is something every human being on the planet, regardless of race, culture, or identity of nationalism, can relate to. It's the basic, you know, social structure of humanity. So I think anything that puts that in jeopardy or danger, it reaches us in the primal lizard part of the brain, I think. You know?
Right. Yeah, our sense to survive or to protect those that are close to us, because that's certainly how I feel. If my family's in danger, it's the heck with me. I'm going to protect them.
Oh, yeah, the adrenaline kicks in, and normal Joe Average becomes Superman at that point. Absolutely.
You know, and you don't have a Joe Average for your lead character. You've got Zach Galligan, he was in Gremlins, but he's also done several movies since, and TV. I mean, how is he to work with in a character that's...
Oh, my gosh. This was. I mean, one of the things that was the most joyful experiences in making the movie was working with Zach Galligan. You know, he has that gravitas, he has that presence, and he has that background and the familiarity with the horror genre, you know, having worked in one of the greatest films of that genre. But also, there's a great humility in the man in that, like a lot of great actors, he realizes that he is only as good as those around him and what he gives to those around him. And one of the things that was fascinating to watch as he performed his character and created his character was how giving he was to his fellow actors, almost... In some senses, like the kid Chad Traeger, who plays his son Tim in the movie, he was almost like an acting instructor in a way at times, in the way that he worked with him and coached him. And a lot of it was emotional support, you know, taking on that mentorship role of a father even beyond when the film was rolling. And I think that helped the two of them bond so that when the scenes did happen, there was a sort of magic to it. And, you know, just his wealth of experience of knowing, you know, technical things like blocking, knowing where to be in a scene. Even early on when we were in pre-production, we were talking about the character. There were so many ideas he had. One of the things I remember that struck me was he said, you know, I want to do a different walk for this character than any other character I've ever did. And he spent quite a bit of time, even before coming to set, perfecting a certain walk that said oodles about who this guy was in terms of his history and backstory. And that was something that I encouraged him to do. And I think he did it brilliantly. So, yeah, he was a wonderful boon to the film. Can't say enough about him.
Now, if you were to divide the movie up into multiple segments, do you have most of it character development, or you'd go briefly touch on that and go right into the urban legend of Sasquatch, or Bigfoot is another name that we've...
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, there have been stories of the wild man going back, you know, odd millennium. But I think it was a Canadian in the 1920s, a guy named J.W. Burns, that sort of consolidated all the myths about these certain wild men and coined the phrase Sasquatch. So its usage in terms of relating to the Bigfoot specifically is quite new in recent history. To answer your question, one of the things that we did in terms of introducing the legend was sort of bookend the film in the sense that the beginning and the end deal with an immediacy of the legend of the Sasquatch without giving anything away. And there are tent poles that are directly pulled out of the mythology of the Sasquatch that litter the film, that people who have studied, cryptozoologists or people that know anything about the history of this creature and sort of the seminal events surrounding it, will see both old homages and direct references to that throughout the film, peppered throughout. So that's sort of expositional material. And the thing that's tricky with exposition is I've seen a lot of films over the years get bogged down where a movie grinds to the halt and the exposition is dealt with, but there's no forward driving of the narrative.
Right.
So I was very careful in the writing of the screenplay to have all of this sort of knowledge and backstory and folklore peppered throughout without being too heavy or thick in any one area to slow down the narrative. Now, as far as the setting up of the characters, it's a convergent narrative story in that there's several people involved in what ultimately happens even beyond the family of Charles Thomas and his son Tim. There's a sheriff named Horace Jimerson that's one of the focal point characters. He has a deputy. There's an Indian medicine man played by the wonderful actor Apisanaquat, who is in the film. And all of those characters are introduced fairly early on, but in separate narrative streams that sort of converge at the nexus in which the Sasquatch horrorization starts happening.
You know, and of all people, you have Lloyd Kaufman as the park ranger. And for those who don't know Lloyd Kaufman, he does all the trauma, gory horror, Toxic Avenger, love him to death, brain splatter movies from the 60s all the way up through nowadays.
He is a wonderful living legend of filmmaking. And as a perfect tribute to him, I was making it a point in his little role that he has, his cameo, that I wanted to give him a gruesome death, which he does indeed
have. I was going to just ask you, do you kill him off? Because I think every director that's worked with him, I met one up in Denver in 2007 that...
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I worked with Lloyd. He's in the movie for 30 seconds, and it was a gruesome head smash death.
I think we're continuing the tradition then.
Oh, awesome. And, you know, I'm an uneducated idiot when it comes to folklore, because with the Bigfoot mystery, I mean, or the Beast Man, or all the many different names that we've called this creature, if it's even a creature. I saw a little bit of your teasers on YouTube, and to me it looked like it also had a lot of a Native American mythology.
Well, I think, you know, given that most of us here in the country are transplants of one sort or another, the Native American was here first. And therefore, the Native American would know more about the creature than anybody else.
Right.
And it's been surprising to me that in recent depictions of the Sasquatch in film, that that's something that hasn't even been touched upon or dealt with. So it was very important for me to have the one of the central characters be Native American in terms of the shaman medicine man that I have, played by the wonderful Apisanaquat. Lewis Freeberg is his character name, to be sort of the person through which we come to understand deeper the nature of what is going on in terms of the horror.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a character by the name of Morning Sky in the film that's played by the wonderful actress Audra Wise, who is a true mystic in every sense of the word in the film, and she's the one that's the first person to be sort of a siren call to galvanize people around the fact that this is something that needs to be dealt with and taken seriously. in the course of the movie. Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, so much of what we learned about settling the Americas in terms of farming, agriculture, and everything was learned from the Native Americans who were here and
right.
for thousands of years probably crossed through the Bering Strait, you know, from Southeast Asia probably several hundred thousand years ago. There's a lot to learn. So it just made sense to have them in critical points, you know, and play critical parts in the film.
Well, what you were saying earlier, too, that of writing the screenplay and the story and the back end, it wasn't just, okay, we have a creature and we have some people and we have them in distress. You've actually looked at the legends of Sasquatch.
Oh, yeah, and I've studied the phenomenon for many years.
This is going to be really interesting when if it comes out in limited release or national release, that you think it's going to surprise a lot of people that it's not your typical Bigfoot movie. I'm trying to remember the name of the horrible the Bigfoot movie that was on the late 70s, early 80s, where you really never, it was a bear rather than Bigfoot.
Oh, there's been a lot of those. Yeah, it was interesting. There were several points in the making of the film, even with the careful scripting that I did, where a couple of my Native American actors would come to me and they would say, you know, this isn't quite appropriate to the culture. And I would say, really? Well, how can we adjust this to make this more, you know, correct? And they would give me feedback. And there were a couple of cases in terms of, I remember there's a sequence where two of my Native American characters were supposed to do a bow of some sort as a sign of reverence of one to the other. And they both came to me and they said, no, this wouldn't happen like this. What would actually happen is we would remain distant, maybe 3 feet between us, and there would be a gesture of touching on the side. And then that would be more customary, and then we would go, you know, to the left and to the right. And I said, well, absolutely, that's what we're going to do. I remember there were a couple of dialogue things where I had some references to certain things. And they said, well, we don't want to change the content of the dialogue, but we think this would be more appropriate in terms of what one tribe person would say to another tribe person. I said, well, absolutely.
Right.
So they definitely had an influence on particularly some of the dialogue that takes place in the movie, which was wonderful.
Well, and wearing so many hats, Wes, I think that gives you a little bit more creativity rather than going back to the writers and saying we need to rework this scene and going back to the producers and say,
right,
we need to redo this, or we need to reshoot this, or we need to rethink it.
And that was very refreshing, I think, for a lot of my actors who have worked on bigger films, in the sense that as the writer and also the director, if there was a change that needed to be made, it was instantaneous. I would say, okay, let's change it, versus the politics of trying to retroactively change something or have the writer rewrite it, you know, within a few days. These were changes made in a matter of seconds. I think having worn so many hats, it was important to me to create a consistency of vision. One of the reasons I directed the film was the idea was to maintain the integrity of the script. I didn't want it turned over like I had seen so many scripts and reinterpreted and bastardized by a director that didn't really understand it.
Oh, yeah, you sit down during the screen and you're like, what the hell is this on the screen? This isn't
exactly
my movie.
Which is the ultimate frustration, I think, for many writers. So fortunately, I was able to avoid that.
Now, you said there's no time frame. You're not in a hurry. How are you in post-production now, or are you still?
No, the film is completely finished as a film, and what we're doing is we're spending the next 7 to 8 months, roughly, pursuing the film festival circuit, getting it out there, submitting, trying to garner word of mouth, building. You know, we just finished building the website, and we're disseminating the trailer as best as we can throughout the whole world. You know, unlike a studio which has a great, you know, budget to do TV ads and radio ads, we don't have that kind of money. So we're doing a more grassroots campaign. I think one of the things that's been great about the advent of the internet is it has been a sort of democratization tool for getting the word out about particular things.
Oh, issues. No kidding. I am sitting in my living room while my wife's playing on the Wii.
Yeah. There you go.
my wife happens to be my co-host, and we do this entire show from the comfort of our house, or we travel the the local circuit in Utah, although it's a smaller market as far as a lot of people think, there's a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows that are filmed in this region, and we have made numerous acquaintances and longtime friends just by doing this. And
that is fantastic. People that you wouldn't be able to reach in any other way in previous times, right?
Oh, yeah. I have an author in Germany. I interviewed him at 1 o'clock in the morning, my time.
That's wonderful.
You know? Or I've had the opportunity to attend some of these conventions around Utah and even in Denver, and I have hundreds and hundreds of contacts. I may never work with that person on a film or a book, but had an opportunity to sit down with them and share their story and their talent and learn how complicated it is to get a movie off the ground. I think this is amazing that you've been able to sit down, write it, direct it, produce it, beg, borrow, plead, and steal probably to get people involved in it.
Right.
And be passionate.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, that's one of the sad things for me is, you know, growing up, I was really enamored of the movies, particularly in the 70s and 80s. And one of the reasons I made this film was an attempt to recreate the type of film that I grew up seeing. I was a big fan of, like, the early John Carpenter movies, like, you know, Halloween, The Fog, Joe Dante's early work, like The Howling, Ridley Scott's Alien. The 70s and 80s were a watershed period for the science fiction and horror genre. And what sort of happened is there's been a sort of corporate co-opting of Hollywood to where everything's kind of become homogenized. And I'm trying to get back to a type of simpler filmmaking where you didn't need $100 million to tell a great story, and that's sort of my mission.
Well, let's hope it's like the Blair Witch Project. I think their budget was less than $50,000, and it's made multitudes of millions.
Yeah.
I mean, not to compare you to anything like that, but that's how sometimes it is. You see a multi-million-dollar movie. Terminator 2, for example, was one of the most expensive movies for its time.
Yeah.
And then you look at Waterworld, that was a total flop in the box office, and they were into it $200+ million.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I've learned over the years in Hollywood is the greatest detriment to the creation of art has been the intervention of middle management. I find on so many levels in commercials, in feature films, it's the intervention of management that has sort of taken the creativity out of things. And I think whenever you have huge amounts of money at stake, it's understandable that the bankers want to have a say from the casting to even how the film is winds up in final cut. So I think the trick is to work with small enough amounts of money that you're left alone as an artist to do what you want to do.
Now, and also, too, in your position with Night Beast, you kind of have the say on the final cut, right?
Yeah, I do, which is very fortunate. Not a lot of filmmakers can say that.
Yeah, like
but
I said earlier.
Terrible, it all rests on me.
Right. And it is an oxymoron to be the producer, writer, the editor, the gopher, the water boy, everything.
Yeah, when early on I did look for producing partners, and early on there was no intent on my part to be the actual line producer of the film. I wanted somebody else to shoulder that so I could focus solely on the actors and directing of the film. However, in the months leading up to actually doing that and interviewing a number of people, I quickly realized they didn't even know as much as I did, so I figured, what's the point? I might as well do that as well. It's not something I intend to do in the future always, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do to get it done.
So at the end of the day, and it's all said and done, and you say, okay, this is the final cut, it's going to print, do your hands go up in the air and you say, thank God it's over, or are you saying, okay, what's next?
Well, no, it's not over, because then there's the promotion and the legwork of getting it into the film festivals and doing interviews and such. So it just becomes a different type of pressure. But, yeah, the pressure of actually giving gestation to the film, that passes, and then a new type of pressure comes on. But that's part of the ride.
Well, I hope to see it in our region. And if we need people to screen it, I go to so many screenings, I actually turn some down.
Wow.
Like two or three a week, because it's who you know or what you know.
I see.
But also having a full-time job as a network administrator outside of doing the iSci-Fi stuff, I have to look at a movie and go, you know, I'm only going to see it in the screen and never go to the movie theater to see it. It's usually one I will just end up turning down.
Yeah.
But this one, I really look forward to especially having the opportunity to sit with you tonight, Wes. And,
well, sure. And, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And I wish success for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I hope this movie comes out and those middle management guys with the fat wallets, when it comes time to be paid, that's when their wallet's fat, realize that people like yourself are capable of working on a finite budget and actually having something that's entertaining and accurate at the same time.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Hi, this is Wes Sullivan, the director of Night Beast, and I just want you all to be aware that you should be listening to iSci-Fi.